Jack Jill here.
Good afternoon.
Welcome to the Jack and Jill Show, entertaining real estate investment advice. I'm Jack Butella.
And I'm Jill DeWitt, broadcasting from sunny Southern California.
Today, Jill and I talk about scaling your business like it's a franchise. Hey, they're the experts, right, Jill?
Totally.
We can learn some stuff from Domino's Pizza.
Oh, my goodness. I think, who's your favorite franchise? I know what mine is. It's probably because where I was born and raised, but I just think they do it right.
I love pizza, so. And I love the pizza tracker, specifically.
See, your favorite franchise is
from Detroit.
Exactly. Mine is from Southern California.
Is yours
Domino's?
Yeah.
Hot and Now.
Sorry. In-N-Out. Hot and
You and your Hot and Now. I think that's the silliest thing, but it makes sense. How is it different from In-N-Out? I don't know, but yeah. Mine is, of course, In-N-Out.
And In-N-Out is not a franchise. I just learned.
Well, this is true. It's not really a franchise.
It's all corporate owned.
But, correct. But, I mean, the way they do it is franchise.
It's
a system.
Drop on
it's not.
Corner, yeah.
It's not everyone has a different menu. No, they all have the exact same menu. They all have very high standards. Nothing's ever frozen. Can I go on and on?
The same. They all have the same smiles. Everybody that works there smiles the same.
The only thing that threw me was, remember the other day I saw that lady work there? I'm like, she's the oldest employee I've ever seen. Everybody there is usually like 25 and under. And she was like 60, which kind of surprised me.
Which is good, I think.
Right.
You know,
but it was good.
Diversity is always good.
Yes.
It also tells me that if it's out of their mold a little bit, then it probably they're having trouble hiring. That's good, which is a good sign of the economy.
Well, maybe she's speedy and she made the cut, man.
Yeah. Maybe. No, Jill. You sound pretty enthusiastic.
I am. I'm like, come on, don't pick on this lady. All right.
The pizza tracker I learned, if you've ever ordered pizza on Domino's Pizza, you have this thing called the pizza tracker. You order it online and you can watch the progress of your order until it arrives at your door, which I just think is amazing.
It's cool.
And that's the standard. I didn't realize this. I was reading in Wired Magazine, that's the standard for everybody placing orders online for anything now. And it's a lot more complicated than you think.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
There's barcodes involved and QR codes and the whole thing.
I can imagine.
I'm trying to implement it in our TitleMind company, our escrow company, title escrow company Jill and I own, so that anybody can log in at any time and see where their deal is.
You know, we could do it with offers to owners too, by the way, when you perfect it.
I was thinking about that.
You know, when you upload your data and now it's being merged and now it's going to the printer and now it's in the mail.
Right.
And then when it's about to hit, that's
cool.
Huge.
You know, the same way you can track a package on UPS or FedEx or the post office now.
Can you do this in your spare time, please, Jack?
Oh, yeah. Right after the show, I'll do it.
Sure. Okay.
I have so much time on my hands.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Before we get into the show, let's take a question posted by one of our members on the jackjill.com online community. It's free.
Okay. Joe M. asks, hi, all. The county I'm targeting had 15 land deals close in 2017, according to Zillow. Redfin shows 20 closed land deals in the past 2 years. LandWatch has 16 available properties for sale. Would lack of activity deter you from this area? The mean selling price per acre is, talk about detail, this is awesome, is $1,232. Two of the 15 properties sold for over $8,000 per acre. When I remove those two properties from the data set, the mean price per acre drops to $948. Do you remove anomalies from your data set? My gut tells me to offer $175 to $190 per acre in this area. This is my first mailer, and I want it to be successful. So please let me know if you feel my logic is off. I plan to send out about 1,500 offers.
Okay, there's a lot of questions in here. I'll take them one by one. His first question is, would the lack of activity deter him from sending out offers in this area? Absolutely not. Some of the best deals that Jill and I have ever done came from what we call rogue mailers that are a little bit off the beaten path, and there's a little bit lack of activity, both from a comparison sales standpoint and a listed property sale standpoint. That just tells me in general, there's always exceptions, but in general, there's some pent-up demand.
Mm-hmm.
you know, people just aren't selling or buying property there, I think there's probably a lot of property.
I think that's a good thing.
Loved it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good thing. They love it. Whoever's out there, they all love it and they want to keep it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Do we remove anomalies from our data set? Every single time I do. Mm-hmm. And here's why. You're looking at data that's recorded. There's two types of real estate data. One from the assessor and one data set from the MLS, which is relies on real estate agents to input data correctly.
Correct. And you're trusting they put in the right numbers.
And more and more, they are becoming one database, and it is becoming the assessor through IDX feeds and some other stuff that goes on. So, you know, are there anomalies in the data set? Yeah. So let's say two people own a let's say a family owns three houses on a block. Jill and I actually know a family like this in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Every time a house comes up for sale on their block, they buy it and they move some other set of kids in.
They're making their own compound.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about. It is really interesting.
It's a little bit weird.
A little
weird.
Too close.
It's a weird, little too weird for me, but yeah. Whatever. That works for them.
Yeah.
So, and he's, and when the kids get old enough, this guy sells a house to one of the kids, or when they get married, they get a house and stuff. So that gets recorded. That sale gets recorded. Do you think he sells it to them for the top retail price that you need in your data set?
It's true.
Absolutely not.
Good point.
He
probably sells it for a dollar.
$20,000. Yeah. $250,000 yeah. House for
a dollar.
$10,000 or something.
There you go.
however it works. So
right.
When you see real low comps that are just out of whack or real high ones, real high ones are usually what's called multi-sales, where for whatever reason, the assessor or the assessor's assistant, six deals got put and closed on one deed, mm-hmm. and they recorded each of those APNs.
Showing
for
with
that,
the one
total number.
Instead of breaking it out, they yeah. just put that one number in there.
So I always shave off the top 2 or 3 or 10 or 15 weird ones and the bottom ones
that's
to get a real number.
Exactly.
That said, Joe, this data set is incredibly tiny. You can't base pricing off of 20 sales.
Two of the 15. So now he's down to 13. He's yeah. pricing it on 13 units.
Right.
Which is hard to do.
So you're going to have to go in and test for, I call it testing for reason. It's an old accounting concept. I'm not sure if it's used anymore, but kind of just apply logic and see, you know, what makes sense. Does it make sense for me to sell for this or this? I don't know.
Right.
Going in at that specific price. Pricing, by the way, is the theme of the week here.
It's the theme of the year.
It's the theme of your career. Is what it is.
Exactly.
It's the reason that we actually have
that's
a show.
Just the theme of the week. It's the theme of the week every week. Thank you, Jack.
So would you price it at $200 an acre if you're going to sell it at $1,000 an acre? And it seems to be going for $8,000 an acre. That seems too light to me.
Right.
Way too light. So I don't want to go back and read the question, but he's saying, should I go in at $175 to $190 per acre in this area? And my gut tells me
I would.
It's way too low.
That's what I think, yeah.
If it's selling for $8,000 an acre,
you're going to piss off a lot of people.
You want to sell it for $4,000 an acre because you want to be in at half. This is for land only, not houses.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to buy it at $2,000 an acre.
Yeah.
That's generally how I would price land that's like this.
But then he said, but the ones that are left over, Jack, the 13 are priced at $1,000 per acre.
Oh, okay.
So that's where he's getting
the
it from.
Sale
the
prices?
Mean price, yeah. So when I remove those two properties, the mean price goes down to $948 an acre.
Yeah, so yeah, 200, then you're correct.
Okay.
It's a law of halves in general. If it depends on how much property you want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
The higher that you go, the more property you're going to buy in mm-hmm. general. Jill and I, for land, I'm not afraid to tell you, scrape the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
We go in intentionally crazy low.
But we've done some other, I'm thinking houses.
For houses,
yeah.
We intentionally go in high.
Yeah.
Because it's all about making $10,000 and getting out of there.
Exactly. And that ties into our topic for today.
Scale your business like a franchise. What does this really mean? This is the meat of the show. A long time ago, I don't really know who the first person was to do it. I think it was some of the pizza companies in the 70s. Got this bright idea that they don't want to deal with the end user customer. They don't want to deal with the people that eat the pizza. They are so end user consumers, customers. I don't need to tell anyone on this who listens to this are difficult.
I know. Think of yourself, listener.
Think how difficult you are.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
Do you want to deal with you?
Here's a good one. Think of how difficult Jack is. You know what's so great? I have to just say this, Jack. And you know that I love you. And I am not trying to throw you under the bus. But
it happens anyway.
Your general disdain for customer service in general.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, is whatever. I'm trying to think of the how to explain it. But you as a customer, you are the biggest pain in the you know what as a customer too. So I got to tell you, whenever
we got. You know what it is? Why? You know why? Because I'm always disappointed.
Oh, you know why? Because you go in thinking you're going
right.
to be disappointed.
You're right.
Because you know what? You walk in saying, no matter what they're going to give me, I'm not going to like it. So I'm going to be mad at everything. Instead of giving them half of a chance.
Did you ever go on a date with a guy? And you're sitting
Many.
Across the table. Sitting across the table. This is the second or third or fourth or fifth date. And you're going, oh. If he just, he looks so good. Why didn't he just stop talking?
Oh, now that is funny.
The more he says, the more disappointed I get. This is not going to work.
Well, yeah, I was thinking
That's
of
how
a different
I feel
reason.
About
We've all gone out with really good looking people. Mm-hmm. That when they talk, they are so stupid.
That's what I'm saying.
You're like,
you're disappointed.
It's not even like, it's not like they say something bad or wrong. Like the guy just, you know, confessed to a crime.
They're just 20 points below.
It's just, they're like, this person, or they're just, maybe they have a lisp. I'm just speaking from experience.
You're going to get us in trouble.
I'm sorry.
let's move on.
Okay, sorry. Anyway, you brought up the analogy.
My point is, you're just disappointed. I'm always disappointed. I'm disappointed in how you almost never can speak. Like, you're supposed to speak, and then someone else speaks.
Ah.
A lot of times you just sit there, and I don't even know what they're saying. They just want to over-talk you because they're afraid you're going to be like, go off on them.
You think?
Yeah, the customer service
person. I think
person.
That they have a lot to say. I think some of them, you know, I've gone up to done customer service. Like, I'm like, so how
You're
are you?
So different on this point.
Oh, okay, here's what I've done. Like, I've been, not necessarily the bank, because I've learned not to do this at the bank, because they will, here's what happens. If I go to the bank teller and say, next, please, how are you today? I'll say, great, how are you? And they're like, wow, oh my God, I can't believe I made it today. I almost couldn't find a parking spot. And this weather, my goodness. And, you know, I think
my
I'm wearing two different socks.
Yeah. You know, I'm a grandmother.
Exactly. Like, oh my gosh. So, yes, you have to be careful.
Are you a grandmother, Jill? Bite
oh
your tongue.
Gosh. And next thing you know, 10 minutes have passed. Yeah. By the way, that's a time waster. That's not how you want your business run. That's the thing too. So anyway, sorry. Where were we?
Jill, do you have a story you want to share with us that happened to you recently at a bank branch because we had to open?
Oh my gosh.
We were doing so many transactions, land transactions, that we can no longer go to the bank and get cashiers.
Oh,
it's to close these deals. So we had our lead employee needed to become a signer on a bank account so she could go get
That
checks.
Took 2 hours.
Yeah, so what happened? Why did
she she wasn't that smart.
So it wasn't a grandmother problem?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you were disappointed.
I was very disappointed.
See, now you're making my point.
She was very nice, but she wasn't smart. She didn't even understand her own process at the bank. This is painful.
So.
Yes.
Domino's Pizza, whomever had this idea first, said, you know, our customer could really be the business owner. Then we can sell them everything. We can sell them the countertops, the pizza dough, all the stuff they need week in and week out to make pizza. We can sell them advertising space, and they can just pay us a fee, and we can teach them how to sell it.
Yeah, we get a fee.
We can educate them.
Take a piece off the top of not only our process
Help
and our
find
name
location.
And all the products, because they have to, now we're going to have a contract. This is brilliant, whoever came up with this idea, because you only have to buy my buns and my hot dogs. No, seriously.
Buns and hot dogs. Said, that's what this next show's about.
But come on, whatever the business is, you have
you
to buy my stuff.
I haven't realized that, listener, we're still in third grade.
Oh, gosh. So there you go. I keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt your story.
So, I mean, it doesn't take a long time to figure this out, how it applies to real estate. You know, do you want to deal with the end user, the person who's walking through the house telling you that this wallpaper's got to go, or I can't buy this house because it's not painted right.
Nice.
You want to deal with that person and pull your hair out. painful. Or do you want to deal with the guy who's going to actually change the wallpaper? And he's buying 13 deals this week. And he just wants to run through and make sure the house isn't falling down before he renovates it. That's who I want to deal with. That's my whole point. Run your real estate business as a wholesale operation. This is really what I'm saying. And take a... This is how we do it anyway. And we intentionally sell property ridiculously inexpensively so that guy keeps coming back.
Right. Well, so I understand. So you're explaining your definition of this topic, which is your topic, is...
Oh, we have separate topics now.
Oh.
This is a Jack topic. Go ahead. Oh, this is a Jill topic. It's all light and fluffy.
No. Well, no, but it's funny because you picked the yoga topic. So that's good. All right. So you explain it like thinking of who you're selling to. Okay.
Who's your customer? The end user or the person who owns a business that you, deals with the end user?
Well, my way of looking at this and my way of thinking of scaling your business like a franchise is not really thinking so much about who I'm selling to or my customer. It's the before that part, which is creating a process.
Right. So the deals you do in Indiana are the exact same that you do in Idaho.
Right. Like you have a, what's it called? I can't think of the term, but there's a three-letter term that describes your way of doing business. Step one is this. Step two is this. Like you have a manual and you have all the steps to do all the transactions. And like you just said, it's the same as any state. The beauty of this is, you can tweak it, make it. Once you have that process, like I just did this with TitleMind. I had my people sit down and tell me, because it's a new company, we're all learning. I have different personalities and I have different talents and different people that I pull together for this company. And they all bring all kinds of good stuff. One's an expert on the customer service part. One's an expert on doing the due diligence part. One's expert on closing the deals and all of whatever. So I had them all sit down. We have a whole long process. And it's like 100 steps, let's just say.
Wow.
Seriously.
It's 100 steps.
Yeah, it's really long. Because and that's for me.
It's one of the steps. Pick up your pencil.
It is not.
Write down the first name of the seller. Step three.
No, it's 100 good steps.
Are
and
you
now,
joking?
No, I'm not kidding. And now
something's wrong with that.
I love when you look at me like, what? You look at me this look like
the deal. I think
you guys
like
are that
steps.
Good. No, because it's way more detailed than that. When the call comes in, we want to qualify the seller, and the way that we qualify the processes, like we are licensed providers of all the top three, right? The data sources. So we check at least two of those three processes, sometimes all three. I need to go back and look at the thing. We might be all checking all three. And it's going to be for me to go say, all right, if you got two sources, you know, one's this and one's this.
To verify ownership.
Right. And then
that's
step.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You're,
so
it's your picking up your pencil is a step. And I understand that.
Okay. So here's my point, if I may, without being interrupted.
This is exactly what happens every single topic with you. And that it's just like you're trying to do it right and I'm trying to do it fast.
You're trying to mess me up. I feel like I'm riding my bike and you're throwing a stick in my wheel. Like, could you put down the sticks, Jack? You just want to see if I'm going to fall. Like, it's not nice. So I'm going to make you sit on your hands and put your sticks down.
I'm sitting on my hands already.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.
I'm actually afraid of you. That's
I'm
going to
take, now hand me your mic. we're gonna take your mic away and your sticks away. What? Now you're gonna write notes. Okay.
Is it okay
take
if
the
I have
pen away.
Tonight?
No. Okay. Stop chewing gum and stop blowing bubbles. Okay. It's kidding. So here's my thing. All right. Think of your, this is really good. You should be doing this. Once you've done your 10 deals and you got them out of the way, you need to now sit back and look at your process. There's some things that we're missing that you need to add in and some things that were overkill that you should take out. And that's what I think of as making your business like a franchise. Streamline it.
Yeah.
And it's all the way start to finish from, if, you know, you should have one process for your doing your mailers. You should have one process for reviewing the properties. You're reviewing your acquisitions. You should have a separate process for closing your deals. You should have another process for posting the properties and marketing, because that's all important. We've talked about that many times. And then all the way to the bitter end, have a process for how you close these deals. Are you going to record them? Are you going to give them instructions to record? Are you going to charge them for it? You know, all that good stuff. Make it easy on yourself. And then what happens is,
as number one, you don't have to think about it. Now it's just, you know, a no brainer. You're not getting creative. You know, you don't have to spend time on it. How did I do the last one? Did that work or that work? Nah, you've already got that. The other thing is, as you grow your business and you bring in new employees and you outsource whatever it is, I mean, it's going to make your life easier. You can, and that's where too, when you're stepping back going, all right, you know, and this is what happens to our members. They quickly go, oh my goodness, this is working. Now I want to do more.
Right.
And you can take a step back and go, what part is the easiest part? Let me outsource that first. Maybe it's just answering the phones and fielding the calls and putting me in a database for me to review. That's probably going to be the first thing that a lot of you are going to outsource. And then you're going to go on and on and on, because you want to be able to scale your business. That's the thing. You don't want to be handling every deal yourself, all by yourself, every day for the rest of your business career.
You do not want to,
because
do that.
You will never make more than, I don't know, how much
there's
money.
Only so much time.
There's a finite number of money you can make.
That's exactly right. You want to scale it. That's exactly right, Jill. The other thing, too, about what you're saying is that you can run, if you have things in an automated type of environment, you can run analytics.
Yep.
And eventually you're going to see what works in Indiana. Well, what the heck? Everything I did in Indiana doesn't work in Arizona, or our numbers are half in Arizona. And so you can streamline processes and customize it a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe people don't eat meat in Indiana. So you discontinue sending meat on their pizza.
Well, you know what? Here's excellent. Well, you know what? And to further your example, which is true, do you remember for a while we were focusing on properties west of the Mississippi? We had done that. We as a company, yep. This is way before Land Academy, we were just doing our land acquisitions.
Right.
We just found that we had all the right people. We knew all the right contacts. We, you know, you knew all those areas, like the back, anything west of the Mississippi by the back. Now it's everywhere. It's nationwide.
Right.
But
it's still easier to do it west of the Mississippi.
See?
I think it's just easier to do business west.
Isn't it interesting?
For us.
See?
You know.
Maybe it's because where we're situated. Maybe because we're, you know, maybe we can communicate with those people better.
Yep.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
We probably have a lot of members, because I know there's a lot of members in our group doing killing it east of the Mississippi.
Right.
And they probably think we're nuts, and they've got it all figured out east of the Mississippi. They're like Florida pros and Georgia pros and whatever pros, you know, so there you go.
This notion of scalability, and we'll end on this, is so important, because you do not want to be, you want to make this infinite. You want your revenue opportunity to be infinite. So you have to ask yourself, look yourself in the mirror and say, what's the thing that I have to do that no one else can do? And I'll tell you what it is. It's pricing. Everything else you can outsource. You can outsource. It's pricing and finding buyers. Those are two things that I think an owner needs to do.
What about picking the acquisitions?
I think that's the neighborhood.
The deal maker.
Oh yeah, you have to do that too.
Okay, thank you.
And that you can almost train somebody to actually, I mean, the way we have it now is that before it gets to me, it's already chosen.
Yeah.
And I get to know I know the person who does that really well. So 9 times out of 10,
you could say, here's the criteria. If it meets these 8 things, we're going to buy it.
Yes. Especially with houses. With land, there's so many more variables. But houses are, the 14 other houses in the block in the last 3 months sold for this. We pretty much know how much
you still have to be careful. I mean, there's things that will mess with your career, mess with your business, and those are the things you do. You know, when there's money going around, that's what you do. You know, the
biggest thing that'll wreck your career is your spouse.
Jeez. Oh, Jack. What am I going to do with you?
Jack. Well, you've done it again. You've wasted another 25 minutes listening to the Jack and Jill Show. Join us tomorrow, where we discuss when and when not to walk into the bank. Jill will share us probably some more stories about
what
happens.
And we answer your question, should you have one, post it on the jackjill.com online community.
You are not alone in your real estate ambition. You got like really smart, really fast.
Not really. You know, I've always been smart. You just don't listen.
We just don't talk to each other that much.
No.
Which I think is great.
No.
That's why we're together and happy.
You know, that's true. It's like we don't, because, yeah.
I know you're smart. I just don't want all the details.
Such a stinker. Oh, my gosh. You know, I should have said that about the thing to ruin your business. is your partner. Thank
Too
you.
Too much talking wrecks everything.
Oh my gosh. Hey, please stop talking and share the fun by subscribing on iTunes or wherever you are listening. And while you're at it, rate us there. We are Jack and Jill.
Information
and inspiration
to buy undervalued property.